Deadbeat Scroll by Mark Coggins is slick, sardonic, and suspenseful. Everything a great thriller should be, says New York Times bestselling author Lee Child. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 17, Checkout Time. When Kittredge walked through the hotel room door 20 minutes later, Dave was stretched out on the bed in the front room, his forearm covering his eyes. The stuffed panda peered over the mound of his stomach.
"Who's that?" asked Kittredge.
"I'm surprised at you, Lieutenant. That's Bao Bao, the giant panda."
"Of course. And her walrus friend?"
"Dave, the desk clerk. He experienced a sudden drop in cabin pressure when we discovered the bodies." Dave did look like a walrus, come to think of it.
"Fuck you guys," he said. "And exactly where are these bodies?"
"In the bathtub." Two obvious lab ghoulies hovered outside in the hallway. One set a case down and pulled out some crime scene booties. He passed a pair across the threshold to Kittredge, who pulled them on with a sigh.
"Too late for this. I'm sure Reardon has tromped all over the damn place."
"Pretty much," I admitted. "We can photograph his soles to distinguish their imprints from the suspects," said the lab guy. He had a crew cut and a sparse salt-and-pepper beard.
"If there are any," snorted the lieutenant as he strode into the bathroom.
The bearded guy joined him, followed by a skinny fellow with a camera.
"Oh, they're already getting ripe," announced Kittredge,
his voice echoing off the tile walls.
"How long has it been?"
"Hard to know until we get them back to the morgue," said the guy with the beard. His voice sounded softer, almost inaudible.
"Yeah, yeah, just give me your best guess."
"Well, rigor has passed. That makes it over 48 hours. Based on that and the initial signs of putrefaction, I'd say 3 or 4 days."
"Fine. Do your thing. I'm going to question these jokers."
Kittredge came back into the main room, but I beat him to the punch on the questioning. 3 to 4 days, I said. That would match up pretty well with the timing of Chris's murder.
"Maybe. You're jumping to all kinds of conclusions, though."
"That is Mrs. Kongsheng Chai, isn't it?" He sniffed fiercely and shot his cuffs.
"Yeah," he admitted, fingering a cuff link. "That's Mrs. Kongsheng Chai."
"And both women were shot execution style in the back of the head with a small caliber round."
"So it appears."
"Then?"
"Then nothing. You've got some explaining to do. Who's the other girl in the tub?"
"Tu Yin Do. This is her room."
"And what does Miss Do do for a living?"
"Sucks cocks,"
Dave said from the bed.
"Shut up, walrus boy. I'll talk to you later. You were saying, Reardon?"
"She works at Golden Fingers. She hasn't been seen since the night of Chris's murder."
"Says who?"
That was the question I'd been dreading. I didn't want to break my promise to Kim to keep her out of the investigation, so I had a cover ready. "Says a customer."
"A customer?"
"Yeah, a regular who heard it from another girl."
"Gee, that's interesting. We questioned all the employees at Golden Fingers, and none of them mentioned a missing girl."
"Would you talk to the police if you were under the thumb of Wo Hop Toe?"
"So she blabs it to a client instead."
I shrugged. "Pillow talk, I guess." Kittredge laughed.
"More like table talk. How'd you find this client?"
A series of flashes reflected off the bathroom walls as the skinny dude worked his camera. I staked out Golden Fingers and followed a businessman after his lunchtime pick-me-up.
"You told me you were working for her parents," said Dave.
"I said shut up,"
snapped Kittredge, not even glancing toward the bed.
"Okay, give. Who is this businessman?"
"He's not going to be happy, I told you."
You think I care? You're not going to be happy if I bring you in on obstruction of justice.
Nate Sline. He runs a startup called Monkey Suit over on Montgomery. Kitchard narrowed his eyes.
This better check out.
It will. He'll probably deny talking to me, but I was seen at the office. Ask the receptionist. She'll remember me since the conversation got a little heated. He slipped a notebook and a pen from the breast pocket of his suit coat and made some notes.
Let me guess. You threatened to tell Mr. Sline's wife what he does on his lunch break.
I cleared my throat. Something like that.
Did he say who at Golden Fingers told him?
No, he didn't. He said he'd been a customer of Tuyen's before. Maybe he asked for her when he went in and was curious about why she wasn't available. I was really laying it on thick now.
And how'd you find Tuyen's address?
Sline knew it. I had the impression he'd visited after hours. Dave told me there were complaints about her having Johns in her room.
That right, Dave?
Yeah,
said Dave grudgingly.
Okay, now maybe you can explain why you didn't mention this lead during our lunch at the farm club.
You mean the all-expenses-paid feast I sprung for?
That one.
I didn't think it would check out. I figured Sline was probably lying to get me off his back. Kittredge looked at me with an ironic expression.
I hate when that happens.
I waved my hands. If we are done with the third degree, can we get back to the important stuff? If the slugs match the one you got from Chris, then what you said at lunch was right. Someone is going around trying to eliminate witnesses. Kittredge flipped his little notebook closed. He opened his mouth to speak, but before he could get anything out, the forensic technician with the beard appeared at the door of the bathroom. The younger girl, he said softly. She was tortured. I stepped out of the residence hotel onto Turk Street about 20 minutes later. The comedy team by the entrance was gone, and I was actually disappointed. I could have used the distraction. Tuyen was tortured with a heated blade applied to sensitive areas beneath her shorts and top. We found the knife encrusted with cauterized flesh in the kitchen sink next to an oven mitt that the torturer must have used to hold it. A burner on the dinky range was almost certainly the source of the heat. I was due to meet Angelina in the lobby of her hotel at 6:30. I really should have taken a taxi to get there on time, but I decided to walk so I could clear my head. Dave had passed out again when the forensic tech started to describe the particulars of the torture, and even Kittredge looked green around the gills. Neither he nor I could come up with a theory that would explain the torturer's motivation. Eliminating witnesses was one thing, but what knowledge would a girl working at a massage parlor have, and apparently fight to retain, that would lead to this level of cruelty? The idea that the torture had nothing to do with gaining information was even more appalling. I arrived at the Huntington, winded and perspiring from the hike up Knob Hill, still unsettled and perplexed by the discoveries at the residence hotel. Angelina wasn't in the lobby, so I parked myself on the tufted red sofa in the middle of the room and tried to think pleasant thoughts while I waited. I was eager to see her, but didn't want my bleak mood to spoil our reunion. I watched businessmen, tourists, and the occasional gaggle of uniformed airline employees stream into the hotel for 15 minutes, and still no Angelina. I took out my phone and texted her. She didn't respond. A few minutes later, I called and went straight to voicemail. Panic tightened my chest. I hurried to the elevator and rode up to her floor. I bolted from the car past a startled maid juggling a tray of room service dishes and stopped at her door. Tapping followed by outright pounding and shouts brought no response. I realized with a start that I was in exactly the same boat as I had been when I stood outside Tuyen's door. I retraced my steps to the lobby and went up to the imposing granite reception desk. I knew I had to sound calm and level-headed to have any chance of convincing the clerk to let me into Angelina's room. But my tachometer was redlining, and it was hard not to let it show. I got off on the wrong foot immediately with a phony smile that felt stiff to me and probably looked serial killer manic to her.
"Good evening, sir," said the clerk. "Checking in?" She was tall and thin and had stringy blonde hair pulled back in a ponytail. No. A friend of mine is staying at the hotel, and I have reason to believe she may be sick or injured." She held her face still, not giving me anything to work with. "I was hoping you could let me into her room so we could check on her."
"I can call her."
"No, I've already tried. She's not answering. I'm worried she may not be able to answer."
"May I ask her name?"
"Angelina Evangelista." She took her lower lip between her teeth as she typed something into a computer. She glanced at the display and then back up at me. "Would you wait here a moment?" She went into an alcove behind the desk and returned a moment later with a tall black man with a buzz cut. He came around the desk, took me firmly by the elbow, and led me to a quiet corner by an oversized lamp. A badge pinned to the lapel of his blazer read, "Walter Ellis, Assistant Manager."
"My name is Ellis," he said. "And you are?"
"Reardon, August Reardon."
"Bethany tells me you have a concern about one of our guests."
"I'm worried she's injured, or worse."
"May I ask why?"
I started to explain about her being late for our appointment, but realized that sounded lame, and now that I thought about it, paranoid. "I just came from an apartment with two dead women," I blurted out. "I'm worried she'll be next."
Ellis glanced around the lobby to see if anyone had heard my outburst, then looked back at me. He ran a thumb and forefinger around the edges of his goatee before speaking.
"That sounds a little fantastic, Mr. Reardon. Are you with the police?"
"No."
"Here in any official capacity?"
"I'm a private investigator. I'm working for Miss Evangelista."
He took a deep breath and let it out through his nose.
"It's against hotel policy to let outsiders into guests' rooms. But I can send someone up to knock on her."
"Never mind. If you want police, I'll get you police."
I took out my phone and punched the number for Kittredge from my call history. He came on immediately, road noise in the background making it clear he was answering from his car.
"Reardon,"
he shouted over some sort of speaker gizmo.
"What? What the fuck is it now? Haven't you done enough for one day?"
I pulled the phone away from my ear to protect my hearing and watched as Ellis did another of his searching glances around the lobby. "I'm at the Huntington Hotel," I told Kittredge, then explained the situation with Angelina and the difficulty with the hotel staff.
"Put him on."
I passed the phone over to Ellis, who took it reluctantly. He stiffened as Kittredge gave him the full benefit of his personality. I didn't hear everything that was said, but
"Just pretend it's a fucking turndown service,"
came through loud and clear. A sick look came over Ellis's face, and eventually he passed the phone back to me.
"He wants to talk to you again."
"Me," I said into the receiver.
"I'll be there in 5. I hope to hell you're wrong about this."
"No kidding." Ellis jerked his head towards the elevator bank and set off in that direction. I followed him into a waiting car, and he punched the number for Angelina's floor.
"I'm going along with this," he said, "but that doesn't mean I have to like it. Let me do all the talking."
"Fine. I just hope there's talking to do." Ellis strode out of the elevator when it stopped, hurrying to get to Angelina's room before I did. He tapped lightly on her door, then said,
"Miss Evangelista, hotel staff."
When there was no response, he tapped some more and repeated his spiel. Finally, he pulled out a card key, pushed it into the slot, and turned to me.
"Wait here."
I let him poke his head through the door and call Angelina's name again. When there was still no answer, I pushed past him and barged into the room. No one was in the bedroom, but it looked far from normal. The chair in front of the lacquered desk was flipped over, and the closet door yawned open with a dress wadded on the floor. The dresser drawers were also open with underwear and socks dribbling out. I didn't waste any time puzzling over those developments and pushed straight into the bathroom, where I found a glass shower stall. It was empty. I stepped back into the bedroom and stood with my hands laced over my head.
"Christ," I said to the ceiling.
Ellis was leaning down to pick up the dress in front of the closet.
"Don't," I snapped. "Why? What does it mean?"
"It means she left in a hurry, or someone made her leave in a hurry. She hadn't checked out, had she?
No, she was still registered. We have her credit card on file. She had just notified the front desk she intended to stay another week.
I nodded. What do we do now? Asked Ellis. Wait. I used the time to make a more thorough search of the room, noting only that Angelina's suitcase was gone and that many, but not all, of her cosmetics and toiletries had been scooped up from the bathroom. I was squatting down to look under the bed when another tap sounded on the door. Ellis pulled it open to reveal Kittredge looming in the hallway with the blonde desk clerk standing anxiously behind him. Kittredge elbowed his way in, holding his badge up for Ellis to see. He pushed the door closed on the clerk's worried face.
Give, he said to me.
She's not here, but a lot of her things are gone and it looks like she left in a hurry. Kittredge nodded and made a quick sweep of the room. He zoomed in on the desk chair and used a handkerchief to pull it upright. I noticed for the first time there was a small length of duct tape stuck to one of the front legs.
Not good, he said.
What?
After you left the residence hotel, we found a bunch of tape wadded up in the trash can. We think it was used to restrain Tu Yin while they...
I thrust out my hand. I know what they did.
You have been listening to The Deadbeat Scroll, a book the New York Journal of Books described as a glorious potpourri of violence, black humor, sex, and a hunt for a lost manuscript. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.